Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to What Goes Up, a Bloomberg Weekly Markets podcast. I'm Sarah Poncek, a reporter on the Cross Asset team.
And I'm Mike Regan, a senior editor at Bloomberg, and the Shirley to Sarah's Laverne.
I thought you were going to go Shirley to Sarah's Temple or something.
Maybe I'm the I'm the Shirley and you're the Laverne. I don't know. We'll work on it.
I'm the Laverne. Either way. This week on the show, agree to disagree with me, but we have May just witnessed the best week for crazy things ever. Bankruptcy stocks are soaring. Evidently, traders on the Robinhood investing app are going all in. Then all of a sudden, a 5% stock decline reminiscent of the infamous days of March. Is it a sign, potentially, of market froth? Our guests, and yes, plural guests, weigh in.
Right, Sarah. And I got to give you a shout out because I think you've covered basically all these crazy things by yourself this week. You've been doing some amazing reporting in the world of crazy things. You stole my thunder with the bankruptcy stock surging. That was going to be my crazy thing of the week. But as you know, I came prepared with a backup. So we're good.
I think there's multiple backups. So many crazy things this week. And I thank you. Thank you for the shout out, Mike. But I also will admit, I'm ready for the weekend. I'm a bit tired.
But let's bring in our guests to help us break it all down. Two of our favorites, Sarah. I'm glad to have them both, the doubleheader here with us this week. Joining us for the I don't know how many times, it's got to be at least 5 or 6, is the head of macro strategy at Medley Global Advisors, Mr. Ben Emmons. Ben, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Mike, it's great to be here again.
And also joining us, it's been a while, but I'm psyched he's back. He is a macro strategist at Bloomberg itself. He writes the Macro Man column. He's a blogger for the Markets Live blog. I believe he holds a doctorate in armchair epidemiology from the University of Google. Is that right, Cameron Kreis?
It's actually Google University. That's a totally separate institution.
Can anyone go ahead and get that degree, Cameron?
Well, you have to put in quite a bit of work, I got to say, with at least 30 seconds of search.
We need dedication. But
that of course, was a great line from one of Cameron's columns, sort of making fun of how everyone is an expert in infectious diseases these days. So we will not pretend to be experts in infectious diseases, but very much experts, our guests in markets. So Ben, let me start with you. I know you've been sort of optimistic about this rebound in stocks to some degree. And, you know, full disclosure, we're recording this podcast here on Thursday, June 11th. The market's down about 5%. Who knows what Friday will look like or even Monday? Maybe we'll see a bounce back. But at the moment, things look like they've turned on the dime. And for one thing, I think it's safe. We could all agree that this market was a little bit overextended, a little bit overbought, and was due for some consolidation, perhaps. This seems a little bit more than consolidation. And I'm not sure how much it matters what the catalyst is, considering how overbought the market was. But I'm just curious your take. I mean, it seems to have really started to roll over a little bit before the Fed meeting. It accelerated after the Fed announcement and the press conference. And then Thursday morning, it was just off to the races with the selling, just a nasty tape from the get-go. So I'm curious, you know, some people are blaming it on sort of this resurgence in the virus. others talking about how the, you know, Powell was not exactly optimistic about the economy, and the economic projections sort of back that up. Again, I'm not sure how much it matters. I feel like it's a market that was due for a little bit of a come down. But walk us through what you're thinking about the state of the market right now. What caused this nasty dip on Thursday? And is it just a sort of correction in an overbought market, or is it the beginning of some more weakness, do you think?
Yes, certainly, Mike. So what I noticed on Monday, actually, Monday evening, there was news out that Korea suddenly cut off communication with South Korea, and the yen dropped like almost two big figures, like really quick, like rallies, right, like against the dollar. And I was pinging this to a friend of mine over in Asia, and I was kind of trying to figure out, like, why is this suddenly happening, right? And, you know, that was the only news that we thought that was the case, because the Japanese government actually came out, I think, like in 45 minutes later after that news broke, which apparently broke already over the weekend, but I guess it came in the market on Monday. And this is Monday night Asia, by the way, right? So our time, you know, Pacific time, like 6, your time 9 at night, something like that. And that was the Japanese government kind of responded like, you know, we're watching this carefully, the situation. So I think that was a bit of a geopolitical tension that started a bit of this flight to safety idea. I think the Treasury's fund there took that on, as well as usual gold and Swiss franc. But it's nothing to do with what we're actually seeing today. Maybe that indeed people have reassessed a bit that the reopening euphoria, as you say, was pretty exuberant, and that's taken somewhat out of the table. People still point to that the Fed yesterday delivered the exact message that the market was looking for. It's a V-shaped recovery on the short term, but a long road ahead. Rates stay low, QE stays in place, and it's sort of a message like, you know, not much more euphoria behind that, right? And I think that, and the acknowledgement that the job report was strong, but not like, you know, we need to see a lot more of it. We would like to see a lot more of it, right? So I think that tone was kind of added to this simmering geopolitical little tension with North Korea in the background that triggered what we're seeing now today, that people then start liquidating maybe some of these trades that were so popular that, you know, that Sarah nicely had written about on the retail side. I was a little bit skeptical on that part, thinking, well, they actually came early to the party this time, instead of late, right? And tends to be, when they're late, retail investors, they tend to be then the ones that really drive the, push the market a bit down and start overreacting. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think this is kind of the sequence of events that we're dealing with. Added to that, perhaps also that I think what people are looking at, though, as a background story, is I think two other stories I want to highlight. One, the story around Hong Kong continues to be something we have to carefully watch. So what I've noted was that the swings in the ADRs, right, that are on the exchanges here is huge, right? And that indicated that there's a lot of speculation, a lot of Chinese companies are looking to move away from U.S. markets and go list in Hong Kong. The flood of IPOs has picked up quite a bit in Hong Kong. There's been a fair bit of dollar demand in Hong Kong, like as in people hoarding dollars. The deposits in banks have risen quite a bit, right? As in, it's not the capital flight, it's just the people, I guess, hoarding the dollar instead of the Hong Kong dollar.
So it sounds like there's plenty of reasons to be concerned. You just got to take your pick. But I want to focus on the reopening, though, because something I've heard from a fair amount of investors this week that I just personally do not understand at all is them saying that a second wave of the coronavirus is priced into markets. So even though we're seeing numbers starting to increase in the likes of California, Texas, Florida, where I personally am right now, a little bit nervous, they're saying, you know, it shouldn't really matter all that much because markets are expecting a second wave. Is that the truth? Like, should we buy into that narrative?
I don't buy that at all.
I don't get it at all. But then I have investors at certain firms, which I won't name, saying this to me before the 5% decline on Thursday, that is. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. So if anyone can make sense of it, I would love to hear that.
Well, so the way I looked at it was that we're going to get the second wave because it was actually communicated already in March by Fauci that, look, whatever we're doing today, we're going to prepare for the second wave, right? So the the fact that the second wave will be coming is there, and the dreadful story about that is the 1918 Spanish flu scenario of like the second wave is worse than the first wave, right? And not sure if that plays a role here today, but what I do think matters to markets mostly is that if we get the second wave that indeed picks up quite a momentum, that there would be a governor or a mayor or anyone, right, that's in charge of a city, county, and so forth, suddenly says, okay, I'm going to close this thing down. And it starts with one, and a bunch of others follow because they're getting worried politically that they may be responsible for more fatalities, right? And they're making that decision on, we got to shut things again down. That would be, I think, very negative for markets, because think about what's priced in that sense, in that V-shape idea, is that the reopening, when you reopen the economy, particularly the United States economy, you get immediately recovery. And that's kind of what it's shown, right? The data, when you look at mobility data or any kinds of like real-time data, sales or whatnot, or people getting rehired, that's all jumping really quickly, right? The capacity of airlines jumping quickly. So I think that the market's pretty nervous if the second wave leads to another lockdown. I think my personal view, it's politically not possible. Like, we would really push ourselves into a depression, right? I think that's in this season of political season not possible. But I do think there's worries in the market that certain parts of the country may end up that way simply because the local governor or mayor who's then in charge is putting his feet on the ground.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Kevin, I wanted to bring you in here a little bit. Both you and Sarah have written really well this week about this whole retail trader phenomenon. You know, you had a column talking about what you call this is the phase of the market where garbage starts to float.
Floating garbage. I love it.
Floating garbage. Yeah, a great line. Now, obviously, you know, these retail traders, they're home, they're bored, there's not a lot of entertainment, they might have some spare cash from their stimulus checks or the extra unemployment benefits, whatever it is, not a lot of options to sort of blow your money foolishly on gambling or expensive trips, whatever you otherwise do. So I mean, it's obvious that these traders have puffed up some ridiculous stocks, like the bankruptcy stocks that you both have written about, you know, Hertz, Chesapeake Energy, arguably the surge in inflows in the jets, the air travel ETF is another example. I think the debate, though, and where it gets sort of, I get greeted with skepticism is when I suggest to people that they're also maybe part of what lifted the entire market over the past couple months. And I know from sort of an AUM standpoint, even all these retail traders together are a sort of drop in the ocean compared to institutional investors. But is it possible that their exuberance has kind of set off signals that has helped the rest of the market sort of float higher than it should have in the last couple months?
Well, I think we need to acknowledge that this is not a regular market. And while it's always tempting to point to catalysts as to why things are moving, fundamental catalysts or whatever, the fact is that it takes a lot less flow to move the price than it used to. I've got a measure of market liquidity, and it's off of its lows, but it's basically still shows worse stock market liquidity than at any point in the last quarter century, other than the very nadir of the financial crisis. At the same time, you see a lot more sort of student body left, student body right price action. If you look at the tick index, the New York Stock Exchange, Sarah pointed out that it hit an all-time low Thursday, having hit an all-time high last month. And indeed, if you look at a long-term chart, you can see the amplitude in terms of highs and lows of the tick index is unparalleled in the history of that index, which is suggests that everybody seems to be moving the same way at the same time, at the same time that there's not really much liquidity. So if Davy Day Trader says, I'm buying Spirit Airlines, well, guess what? Davy Day Trader has 200,000.
200,000? 1.5 million. How about that?
Well, whatever. I'm not one of them, right? Whatever. Anyway, he's got this legion of people hanging on his sort of every word. And if each one of them, you know, if a million people each buy $5,000 worth of stock, that's all of a sudden a $5 billion trade. That's going to move the price, right? And okay, that's an exaggeration, but I think it does speak to the dynamic of what's going on here.
For those who don't know Davy Day Trader, that is Dave Portnoy. He's the founder of the website Barstool Sports. This guy was most famous recently for his reviews of pizza. He would go to pizza joints, take one bite and give you a review. And that's what made him famous.
Well, what happened was he sold part of his business to this this Penn National Gaming, got paid in stock. The stock went up, then it collapsed, and it came back. And he also got some cash. So he's a pretty wealthy guy, right? And he can't gamble on sports because there is no sports. So he started trading stocks, basically, and coincidentally, more or less right at the time of the low. And guess what? You know, a blind monkey throwing darts at a newspaper, trading from the long side, was going to make money over the last 2.5 months. And that's, and that's what he's done.
I'll give it to him. I mean, it's been great marketing on his behalf, everything going on right now and him day trading and people following along. But it feels like in the year of 2020, the anecdotes are endless. Okay, you have Davy Day Trader, as he's called. One, my colleague Vildana this past week was talking to a strategist over at BTIG who was telling her how all of a sudden his eye doctor's son is asking her which stocks he should be buying. At the same time, I've been spending my days just watching Robin Tracks, which watches tracks Robinhood, and on Wall Street Bets once again. And I think of Luke Cowell, I'll say RIP, no longer with us at Bloomberg, but wishing him the best. No,
well, he's not dead.
But wishing him the best, miss him very much. But he wrote this almost infamous story back in February, right before everything blew up. And it was about the Wall Street Bets crowd and Robinhood traders and kind of speculating that there could be some type of 99.com bubble out and about. And all of a sudden, it feels like it's back, yet we're in the midst of a recession. We just experienced this extremely fast bear market and fast rebound. But in a way, it feels very speculative. I mean, what do you make of that type of environment that we're in right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is in many ways very reminiscent of the dot-com era. You know, the Wall Street Bets, the Reddits of today were the sort of the Yahoo message boards of 20 some odd years ago. To some extent, I suppose it's difficult to square this idea that there's a zillion people out of work and struggling with this notion that people have all this spare cash to play with the market. You know, there's a this sort of cliche, this caricature that sort of the millennials living at home took their stimulus checks and opened Robinhood accounts. And yeah, maybe there's something to it. I'm sure that some of the individuals involved with this are professionals or software engineers or whatever. You know, people who can work from home do have disposable income. In fact, more disposable income than they used to because they don't go out anymore. Yeah, I mean, I think there is something to it. And, you know, it's almost enough to make me want to take off my flip-flops, put on a pair of shoes, and go get them shined so I can get some stock tips.
I do wonder about, this all coincides with sort of universal commission-free trading, too. You know, it's, you know, it's one thing if you have a few hundred bucks to invest in the market, but a trade costs 10 or 15 bucks, you're going to be sort of a little more gun shy than if you can do it for free to some degree. But Ben, let's bring you in on this. What do you make of all this? Is this a sort of a sustainable effect that we're going to have to deal with in the market now, these day traders, or is it, you know, something that a real institutional investor should just kind of forget about?
I don't think so, Mike. I think that you do want to keep the retail traders in mind, because as Cameron points out, right? People are at home. They have other time. They have more spare time, I guess. Like, it's different work environment. You sit at work doing this, right? And because you deal with a lot of people around you at work. So I think that may play a role, that you have less distraction besides the money that you may have access. You know, let's not forget we have the savings rate now at 33%, right? So there's a lot of people have a lot of money, I think, just sitting on the sideline and then looking for new opportunities, right? Which this could become, again, the next opportunity. We're getting a decent dip here and people come back, right? So I want to add to that is that this dot-com bubble era that we went through in the late 90s, think about the stocks on that are working on vaccines for this crisis, right? Like, you know, some of those are just also completely through the roof, other than this Hertz and other like stocks. So there's another kind of bubble kind of environment in the background, right? And one of them will become the true winner, right? And it has the vaccine, and that is the magic potion, if you will. But there's a lot of speculation there, right? So I think that will continue. People will continue to come back in, seeking out those types of opportunities as well, than just buying Apple and Google and Tesla, I guess, right? You know, your standard trades. I think that's going to stay here, this kind of tactical retail style trading here, until the path of the economy is more clear.
Obviously, it's really hard to know in the short term, but you said, I mean, people will come back. Do you get the sense that, like Mike said, we are recording on a Thursday. We don't know what will happen on Friday, but that people will be willing to come back and step in at these levels. I mean, if I just use a benchmark as an example, and sure, that might be skewed because you have much more leniency towards your mega cap names like Google and Microsoft, for example. But I mean, if you look at the valuation for the S&P right now, it's still well above what it was back in February on a forward basis. So do you think people will be as willing to come back in and quote unquote catch a falling knife so easily?
Look, I do think there's optimism out there that we're going to see the end of the tunnel here, right? It's just not going to stay this way. It's in a contagious virus, but it's not going to dictate our lives forever, because there's such a political pressure on getting this vaccine and therapeutics. And we've made a huge amount of investment in the personal protective equipment. And the system is more flooded with that now. Like, there is a form of comfort, I think, compared to the February situation that was not in place. Therefore, we had to go to a lockdown. So the lockdown scenario, in my view, is a scenario that's not as likely, maybe localized, but not nationwide or globally. So it remains really, I think, an opportunity of this future rebound of the economy that you do want to play, why you want to come back and take opportunity here as you have days like this. You know, that I am more on the optimistic side that way, as opposed to those who really think that we, you know, the pandemic was just really what pushed the new normal into a new depression, right? And we're going to get a new normal triple. Like, it's really, really, really bad, right? We're going to get deflation, and we're going to not grow much of all, and we're going to have this army of unemployed people out there, and we're just not going to get out of it. That I firmly don't believe in that, because there's been a tremendous amount of effort done here to actually not be in that scenario. And I think DeMarco was right to not buy that depression scenario, but stay on the optimistic side. Hence, there's going to be dip buying again here coming in. If not, tomorrow, it will be in the next week or so, you know, driven by data or driven by just what I said, like the optimism of that we can get out of it.
I would disagree in the sense that you don't have to think that there's going to be a depression to think that stocks are a lousy investment here. I mean, paying $1.10 for a dollar is never a good idea. It doesn't matter what the economy is doing. And I think if you buy stocks here, essentially you're paying $1.25 for 85 cents. If you look at the ratio of the U.S. market cap to the size of the economy, even taking out the corona hit in the first quarter, we're basically at all-time highs. That implies an expected return over the next decade that's negative. So personally, I have no interest in hopping in here, and I wouldn't have interest for many, many percents.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Since both you guys are macro focused, I did want to ask a little bit about the dollar. I feel like the dollar bears are out in force these days. And I know there's been, I don't know if it's quite consensus or maybe just the loudest voices have been the dollar bears over the years, and they've kind of not necessarily been right. Something really caught my eye today is one Goldman strategist has a call for something like a 20% depreciation in the dollar over the next few years. I don't know exactly how many years, but Cameron, I got to wonder, you know, and I'm kind of putting you on the spot here because I know you haven't written about the dollar in a while, but if you do have an outlook for the dollar, and also I feel like if the dollar weakens as much as 20% in the next couple of years, the narrative will switch from sort of a weak dollar is good for the economy to wait a second, this is bad. What's your outlook for the dollar? And am I right that sort of that much of a weakness would be not necessarily a bullish economy story?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. And insofar as we are kind of reliving a 1999, 2000 parallel in the stock market, maybe the follow through will be a sort of mid 2000s. Episode with the dollar, insofar as if U.S. demand comes back and you have this massive pent-up demand on the part of consumers, whether it emerges this year or next year or 2022, I don't know, what that could very easily entail would be an extraordinary rise in the trade deficit at the same time that monetary policy is committed to being super easy and fiscal policy is obviously a mess. So if you have the current account deficit blowing out to 5-6% of GDP at the same time that you still have a tremendously large budget deficit, you could see suddenly us moving and the rest of the world recovers a bit and risk sentiment improves on a more structural basis. You could move from this environment where there's been this sort of structural shortage of dollars for years to reverting back to where we were starting in, say, 2003, where there was a structural surplus of dollars. Is it going to happen? There's a chance. I'm not convinced it's a base case, but if this individual is going to be right about a tremendous decline in the dollar, that's probably what it will look like. I would say, as an addendum, that there is certainly an argument to be made to want to be long sort of real assets versus every currency, because none of these currencies pay you a dime. And the fiscal situation in all of these countries is terrible. And we know that we can't trust the price of financial assets because for various reasons that we've talked about, and I'm sure the crazy thing we'll talk about some more, there's an argument to be made for owning something that hurts when it falls on you.
You know, Sarah, Cameron gave us the perfect segue to crazy things there, and I totally dropped the ball on it.
You're grabbing it and running with it now.
That's so. My bad. Why don't you get us started? What's the craziest thing you've? I know you've written about 20 crazy things stories this week. So what's your top?
So there are so many. It's really hard to choose. One that I will go with on Monday, the day that the S&P turned positive for 2020, what at the close and also in the middle of the day, if you were to look at the members of the S&P since March 23rd, every single one of them was positive. And I know Cameron then took it a step further and he ran some programs and found that that was the first time that we've ever seen every single stock move higher together over an 11-week period, which is pretty crazy. And then one more just for you, Mike, because I know you love leveraged ETFs. So I love
to hate him.
Yeah, love to hate him. I've actually been spending my days just sitting on robintrack.net, which tracks what users on Robinhood are doing. And on Thursday, as stocks were selling off, what were they adding up? What was number three on the most popular, most increased interest list? Well, it was T-VIX. So leveraged VIX products just for you, Mike.
Oh, boy. What could possibly go wrong with that trade?
Nothing.
All right, Cameron. Cameron told me he has a doozy for the crazy things segment, so expectations are high.
Well, I mean, this is coming from sort of a finance geek, so my definition of crazy interesting might not be the same as yours. So, you know, we know that the Robinhood folks love bankrupt companies. We know that they love companies named after inventors. Obviously, Tesla has been a darling for years. And as I'm sure you know, last week saw the debut of Nikola, named after the same scientist's first name. And I've already looked. He didn't have a middle name, so that was going to be my next career move. So as I'm sure you saw, or as you may have seen, at one point, Nikola had a market cap greater than Ford, despite having zero revenues. Which is crazy enough as it is, right? But here's my crazy thing. The option market for Nikola is the wildest thing I have ever seen in my life. So the issue is that there's no, because it's a new stock, you can't borrow it. So if you want to short it, you can't. So the only way you can bet against it is to buy puts. So the structure of the option market is baloney. So the stock is $60, give or take. So I'm looking at the July options. The July 60 calls, so the at-the-money calls, trade at a 213 vol and are priced around $8. That's crazy enough as it is. The 60 puts are trading at a 280 vol and are priced at $28. So the at-the-money put is worth $20 more than the at-the-money call, which is crazy. But that's still not the craziest thing I've seen. I got this one from a friend in Nikola Options. Option traders will know there's a thing called a box where you sell a call spread, say a 40-50 call spread, and then you sell a put spread against it. The thing can only ever be worth $10. A 40-50 box can only ever be worth $10. Well, I've got a friend who sold the Nikola July 40-50 call spread for $8.80. He sold the 50-40 Nikola put spread for $8. So he sold something that could only ever be worth $10 for $16.80. And that, my friends, is the craziest thing I've seen this week.
That's pretty good. Ben, you got some tough competition with that one.
Oh, that's tough, yeah. It's good stuff. Well, you know, I have a financial one. I have one for Sarah, actually, that I want to mention. It's a kind of local thing for Sarah.
All right.
Obviously, I've been tracking this Hong Kong situation. So, you know, the ADR swings were pretty dramatic. Like, if you take, you know, like companies that you never heard of a Jiayin Group or Wins Finance, who just swing like 900, 800% in ADRs. ADRs, by the way, like are, you know, the most illiquid things you can trade, right? I think that is really, really locally traded on our exchanges here. I think that just, again, speaks to this tension that's there, right? There's a real tension building from money coming out of the United States back to Hong Kong that these ADR prices show, aside from their extraordinary swings, right? Which, again, back to the Hertz and other American Airlines type swings, it's kind of similar, right? So there's this really awkward phenomenon. So that is unusual, if not crazy. And then I guess the local one, I popped up some website, you know, legitimate website. I think it's UPI is, a trending website. I clicked on a few things and I read here the following. A Python hunter in Florida, known as the Python Cowboy, might have had a new record on his hands by bagging a 17-foot snake by putting up a fierce fight. And that this is in Martin County Trapping Wildlife Rescue owner Mike Kimmel. That's the Python Cowboy in Florida. I thought of I thought of Sarah.
I can't say I'm surprised. Funny story. Not funny, actually. Supposedly, in the last week or so, there was a 7-foot alligator found in the water right outside my house. So safe to say, I'm not going in the water anytime soon. So pythons, alligators, that's what you get down here. Ben Emmons and Cameron Christ, we will have to leave it there. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure as always.
What Goes Up will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal website and app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find us. And you can find us on Twitter. Follow me at Sarah Ponsek, Mike is at Reganonymous, and Cameron Kreis is at Fifth Rule. You can also follow Bloomberg Podcasts at Podcasts. What Goes Up is produced by Jordan Gospore. The head of Bloomberg Podcast is Francesca Levy. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.